this time studying base stealing. Now, Gwynn can steal bases. He has stolen more than 300 in his career, but it's not his strength. And dedicating all his time to that instead of hitting would be a waste of his time and talent. So the important question is, how should you focus your time and energy? Use these guidelines to help you. Focus 70% on strengths. Effective leaders who reach their potential spend more time focusing on what they do well than on what they do wrong. Leadership expert Peter Drucker notes, "The great mystery isn't that people do things badly, but that they occasionally do a few things well. The only thing that is universal is incompetence. Strength is always specific." Nobody ever commented, for example, that the great violinist Jaska Heifetz probably couldn't play the trumpet very well. To be successful, focus on your strengths and develop them. That's where you should pour your time, energy, and resources. Focus 25% on new things. Growth equals change. If you want to get better, you have to keep changing and improving. That means stepping out into new areas. Gwynn modeled that several years ago after he had a conversation with Ted Williams. The old pro suggested that learning to hit inside pitches would make Gwynn a better player. Gwynn, who preferred outside balls, worked on it, and his average went up significantly. If you dedicate time to new things related to areas of strength, then you'll grow as a leader. Don't forget, in leadership, if you're through growing, you're through. Focus 5% on areas of weakness. Nobody can entirely avoid working in areas of weakness. The key is to minimize it as much as possible, and leaders can do it by delegating. For example, I delegate detail work to others. A team of people at the Enjoy group handles all the logistics of my conferences. That way, when I'm there, I stick to the things I do best, such as the actual speaking. Reflecting on it. How would you rate yourself in the area of focus? Have you been majoring in minor things? Have you spent so much time shoring up your weaknesses that you've failed to build up your strengths? Do the people with the least potential monopolize your time? If so, you've probably lost focus. To get back on track with your focus, do these things. Work on yourself. You are your greatest asset or detriment. Work at your priorities. You will have to fight for them. Work in your strengths. You can reach your potential. Work with your contemporaries. You can't be effective alone. Bringing it home. To improve your focus, do the following. Shift to strengths. Make a list of 3 or 4 things you do well in your job. What percentage of your time do you spend doing them? What percentage of your resources is dedicated to these areas of strength? Devise a plan to make changes, allowing you to dedicate 70% of your time to your strengths. If you can't, it may be time to reassess your job or career. Staff your weaknesses. Identify 3 or 4 activities necessary for your job that you don't do well. Determine how you can delegate the jobs to others. Will it require hiring staff? Can you partner with a coworker to share responsibilities? Develop a plan. Create an edge. Now that you've looked at priorities, think about concentration. What would it take for you to go to the next level in your main area of strength? What new tools do you need? Rethink how you do things and be willing to make sacrifices. Time and money spent to take you to the next level are the best investment you can make. Daily takeaway. Experienced animal trainers take a stool with them when they step into a cage with a lion. Why a stool? It tames a lion better than anything except maybe a tranquilizer gun. When the trainer holds the stool with the legs extended toward the lion's face, the animal tries to focus on all 4 legs at once, and that paralyzes him. Divided focus always works against you. Chapter 9, Generosity. Your candle loses nothing when it lights another. No person was ever honored for what he received. Honor has been the reward for what he gave. Calvin Coolidge, American President. Giving is the highest level of living. John C. Maxwell. It starts in the heart. When you think of generous people, who comes to mind? Do you picture a millionaire philanthropist from the turn of the century, such as Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and Andrew Mellon? Do you think of contemporary givers such as Joan Kroc or Bill Gates? Those people have given away millions of dollars. But I want to acquaint you with another giver. She is someone you've probably never heard of, yet she typifies the deepest kind of giving, the kind that can come only from the heart. Her name is Elizabeth Elliot. In the early 1950s, she accompanied a group of missionaries to Ecuador with the hope of reaching the Quechua Indians. Among that group was a young man named Jim, who had been courting her since 1947. While they worked together and gave their lives to serving the Ecuadorian Indians, they finally decided to give themselves to each other and were married. They had been together about 2 years and had a 10-month-old daughter named Valerie when Jim and four other missionaries felt compelled to make contact with another small group of Indians living in the area called the Auca. The Indians had a fierce reputation. The earliest record of any contact with them was of their killing a priest in the 1600s. Since then, they had attacked every outsider who came their way. Even the other Ecuadorian Indians avoided them because of their brutality. As Jim and the others prepared to make contact, Elizabeth knew that the five men would be putting themselves in danger, but she was resolute. The two of them had given their lives to this mission. For several weeks, a missionary pilot flew a small plane over an Aucan village and dropped supplies and other items as gifts. They even included pictures of themselves to prepare the tribespeople for their first contact. A few weeks later, Jim and four others landed on a small stretch of beach on the Curaray River and set up camp. There, they made contact with three Aucans, a man and two women, who seemed to be friendly and receptive. And in following days, they met with several others. They told their wives by radio that they seemed to be making significant progress in befriending the tribe. But then, a few days later, the men failed to check in with the base camp at an appointed time. Their wives waited in vain to hear from them. Minutes passed, then hours, and then a day. Elizabeth and the others feared the worst. A search party went out to look for the men and radioed back bad news. They had spotted the body of a white man floating in the river. The searchers found the men one by one. With each, it was the same. He had been slashed with Aucan spears. All five of the men were dead. Under those circumstances, many people in Elizabeth Elliot's shoes would have gone home. It's one thing to be willing to give up a comfortable life in the United States to help other people. It's quite another to give up your spouse. But Elliot had a truly generous heart. Despite her terrible loss, she still wanted to help the people of Ecuador. She stayed and served the Quechuans with whom she was living. What happened after that is even more remarkable. Other missionaries continued trying to make contact with an Aucan village, and after a couple of years, they succeeded. Immediately, Elizabeth Elliot rushed to the village. Was it to seek revenge? No, it was to work with the people there and serve them. Elliot lived and worked among the Aucan people for 2 years, and many of them gladly accepted the message of God's love she carried, including two of the seven men who had killed her husband. Fleshing it out. Nothing speaks to others more loudly or serves them better than generosity from a leader. True generosity isn't an occasional event. It comes from the heart and permeates every aspect of a leader's life, touching his time, money, talents, and possessions. Effective leaders, the kind that people want to follow, don't gather things just for themselves. They do it in order to give to others. Cultivate the quality of generosity in your life. Here's how. Number one, be grateful for whatever you have. It's hard for a person to be generous when he's not satisfied with what he has. Generosity rises out of contentment, and that doesn't come with acquiring more. Millionaire John D. Rockefeller admitted, "I have made millions, but they have brought me no happiness." If you're not content with little, you won't be content with a lot. And if you're not generous with little, you won't suddenly change if you become wealthy. Number two, put people first. The measure of a leader is not the number of people who serve him, but the number of people he serves. Generosity requires putting others first. If you can do that, giving becomes much easier. Number 3, don't allow the